The Leach Report Radio Network is on the air with the voice of the Wildcats, Tom Leach. Join in with the rest of Big Blue Nation to get the latest insights and opinions on your Kentucky Wildcats from an all-star lineup of guests. If you have a question for Tom or one of our guests, tweet him to @LeachReport or email to LeachReport@gmail.com. And you can call toll-free anywhere across the Commonwealth of Kentucky at 877-904-1080. Now, here's Tom.
It is our Tuesday edition of the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. And glad you are joining us for an hour of UK sports conversation as we move toward the resumption of the football season for the Wildcats this Saturday. We've got the blue-white game this Sunday. First exhibition game for Kentucky basketball is a week from Friday. So it is just about to overlap time. Keeneland resumes on Wednesday. Breeders' Cup next month in Louisville. So it's a fun time to be a sports fan in the state of Kentucky. And we will talk about Kentucky football and basketball today with our guests, Larry Vaught and the Herald Leader columnist Mark Story. And we'll also get you another player interview with one of the basketball players, one of the newcomers, Emmanuel Quickly, won the three-point shooting contest over Tyler Hero at Big Blue Madness on Friday. These are the interviews we did last month. We got extended sessions with one-on-ones with the guys, and so got some good stuff from Emmanuel Quickly a little bit later on in the show. That's our guest lineup presented by Sleep Outfitters. Wildcat News of the Day is a service of Cardinal Point Financial Group, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. And let's get right to the Wildcat News of the Day. And it starts with Mark Stoops and his press session yesterday and his radio show last night. Was asked about any concern of his players getting caught up in all the talk about the SEC Eastern Division race and winning the division, getting to the SEC championship game, et cetera. And he said they addressed that right up front yesterday. We're going to address it yesterday. 6 one-week seasons left is his message. He said they had a good practice yesterday on the show last night, so he was encouraged by that. He thought they were really dialed in yesterday. He said that Nasir Watkins may be able to play some this week. That's a little bit ahead of schedule, so they'll take a look at him today in practice and see how he's doing. He talked about getting some more work for Darian Kennard at that left tackle spot, or at a tackle spot. I'm assuming left tackle, but it could be the other side. Said they are going to take a look at Taven Richardson doing some work in the slot because they're going to redshirt Cleavan Thomas and Akeem Hayes tweaked an ankle, and so they're going to go ahead and just redshirt him for the season. So those were a couple of guys that were down the depth chart at the slot position. So they'll start working Taven some at the slot. He mentioned last week that they would take a look at some other receivers to see if there's somebody that could help them. And he said Zaire Hughes is a guy he mentioned again. He mentioned him last week, mentioned him again last night as somebody that they think his speed could be something they could make use of. So I would say we'll probably see a little more of Zaire Hughes on the field this weekend. He also had a good update on Josh Pascal, talking about how well Josh's recovery is going. There were some folks on Twitter that kind of carried that out to thinking Josh might return because he could, you know, you theoretically could play in anything less than four games and still be redshirted. And I think that's possible. And if you're motivating Josh and just keeping his spirits up, you want to keep that goal out there. I don't know that I would count on that happening. Maybe for a bowl game, at least dressing out, something like that. But we'll see. You would certainly want to hold it out there as a carrot for Josh to help motivate his workouts. But it sounds like all is going well for Josh. Stoops said on the show last night, quote, "Want to get back to who we are." And I think you're going to see a big game from Benny Snell this weekend. Just looking at some numbers for Vanderbilt's defense. Their run defense, they gave up 292 yards last week on 63 rushes to Florida. Georgia ran for 219. South Carolina ran for 273. Notre Dame ran for 245. So I think given that Kentucky is coming off a game where it didn't run the ball well, they're going to rededicate themselves to that, I would think. and you're getting a matchup against a team that has struggled to defend the run. So I think Benny has himself a big game this weekend. The midseason All-America team came out yesterday for ESPN, and they included both Josh Allen and Bunchy Stallings. So happy for those two guys. And I think the natural reaction for Kentucky fans is no Benny Snell, number one rusher in the toughest conference in the country. No, Benny didn't make the list, which I think is great if you're Mark Stoops. As I said last night to him, I'm guessing you didn't have to even mention to Benny that he wasn't on a list like this. So it's just another source of motivation for Benny Snell, and he can get the recognition. The recognition that matters is at the end of the year, not at the midseason point. But still nice to get for guys like Josh and Bunchy, and Josh was named a midseason All-American by the Sporting News as well. Pro Football Focus came out with rankings of the top cornerbacks and how well they're covering receivers. Their college division does a lot of in-depth stats, and if you're into numbers, it's some really cool stuff. Anyway, Derek ranks number fifth in the country among cornerbacks, only three catches allowed from 20 targets, according to their numbers. Vandy expects running back Keyshawn Vaughn to play versus Kentucky, so that's a help for the Commodores. When he went out, their fortunes went south against Florida. And the NBA season starts tonight. Stories that are out are saying Jody Meeks will be traded to Milwaukee and then be waived. Now, that would enable him to – he's going to be on suspension to start the season, but he'd be able to go ahead and get his money without having to sit through the suspension, and then he could still be signed by another team, which one would expect would probably happen when he comes off the suspension. Links to the stories that we talk about can be found on the Bud Light Leach Report page at TomLeachKY.com. When we come back, Larry Vaught joins the program. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
It's the Leach Report on Talk Radio 1080. Coming up next, it's Kentucky Sports Radio with Matt Jones.
16 after the top of the hour, we go to the Kentucky Branded Hotline. Bring on Larry Vaught from VaughtsViews.com. You can read him at LEX18.com. as well. Larry, what are you expecting to see this Saturday when Vandy rolls into town?
Expecting to see a lot of Benny Snell, Tom. I think
me too.
Kentucky we'll get back maybe to kind of what its identity has been and just not worry about trying to trick other teams or outthink itself, kind of get back to what it does best. And then I'm also expecting to see Terry Wilson play a little bit better, a little bit more composed, and do the things that he did the first five games, and maybe he got away from a little bit against Texas A&M. But I think the bye week came at a good time. I think we'll see a refreshed Kentucky team out there that'll look like the team we saw earlier in the season.
I was just mentioning, I was looking at Vandy's rush numbers, and it's a good matchup for Benny and the run game to have a big day, and to kind of, I think you, as you said, you want to just kind of reset the computer, if you will, and that's what your identity is, and that's what you're going to ride home.
Exactly. Hopefully Drake Jackson's back to full speed, and you get Nasir Watkins back, gives you some depth there at that tackle, and it certainly sounds like maybe now he's going to be back. And again, you just have given everybody an extra week to kind of let things heal up. I think the break came at just the time when Kentucky needed it. I don't think it would have, to me, it wouldn't have mattered win or lose against Texas A&M. It still would have been a good time to have that break and kind of reset yourself for this second half of the season, because I still think a special season is setting right there. And again, I think you and I were both fairly optimistic going into the season, but I didn't think we would be talking today and I'd be saying something like, if Kentucky's only 8-4 now, I'll be really disappointed. But I think they're going to win 10. Now, maybe I'm wrong and we'll see, but I still think they're going to.
They put in a lot of work. Guys had to, a lot of these guys came here, had to believe in something that nobody else believed in, that they could do. They could put themselves in the position they put themselves in. So now it's there for the taking, and because circumstances sometimes have to break your way too. And I think as you said, the open date comes at a good time. The way the schedule plays out, some of the teams they've got coming up, have not been as good as people thought they were going to be at the beginning of the year. Although it was a nice win for Tennessee last Saturday, but it's just. there are a lot of favorable circumstances. There are a lot of things teed up for him. But just because it's there for the taking, you still have to go take it.
That's exactly right. Because remember back in 2007, it was it looked like the things were all lined up. They went and played that game against Mississippi State. And if I remember correctly, I think Raphael Little and Keenan Burton were both out with injuries because Kentucky hadn't got to a bye week yet in that game, and they just laid an egg. Mississippi State just physically pounded them, and then that team was never the same the rest of the year, and what looked like it could be really, really good turned in just to, I mean, still a good season, but not near as special as what you thought it might be. So I think this team is a lot better off. Again, I kind of hated to see that Tennessee win. I thought they were right on the verge of maybe just kind of falling apart and losing any confidence they had, and that certainly will recharge them, I think, some. But, again, I think going forward, you got to feel like Kentucky's got a great chance to win any game it's got left if they just go back to playing the way that they can. And I certainly never coach, but I still kind of think maybe against Texas A&M, Kentucky might have overthought things and went in thinking, hey, Texas A&M is so good against the run, we've got to do something different, and maybe kind of outthought itself, and I don't think you'll see that happen again.
Stoops said something on the radio show last night that I thought was interesting. He talked about players, when they come in to meet with him, that the first thing they always say is, I don't want to do anything to hurt this team. He seems to have a great bond that is there for this team, and you know it's understandable if that a guy, you know, you're not getting this as many touches as you want, or you know the ball's not being thrown to you, or you're not getting as many chances to play, or whatever it might be, that you go talk, you know, you want to go talk to the coach and make your case, but you do so in a way that the first thing you say is, I want to ask you about this, coach, but understand I'm all in, I don't want to hurt the team. He's got a, you know, that's another set of a favorable circumstance that he has working for him.
I would agree, Tom, and I heard him say that. And, again, this team just seems to kind of get it. The leaders and the best players have bought into that their whole time at Kentucky, and I think it makes it a little bit easier for everybody else to do so. And, again, I think winning helps that, too. It's a little easier to be all in team-wise when your team is winning. But, again, everything just still kind of seems in place for them to do what they want to do. And I think if I was looking at the one thing you would really like to kind of see, you'd like to see a receiver just kind of emerge as a guy that can be there and be counted on every game. Now, again, quarterback has to be able to get him the ball, and so I don't know enough to know if that's more of an issue or what, but they need somebody to be like Bouvier was early in the season, get back to making some big plays and give them some big pluses in that part of the game, because that's one thing they've been lacking recently, and I think that would really help if that could emerge.
I agree. Going to get to a quick break. Larry Vaught's with us, 23 after the top of the hour. We'll be right back. It's the Leach Report Radio Network. We're served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
You're tuned to Talk Radio 1080 and The Leach Report. And visit TomLeachKY.com for more news and views on the Cats.
We're talking with Larry Vaught on the Kentucky Branded Hotline. You can read him at VaughtsViews.com. And you can also go to LEX18.com. And one of the stories you'll find is about a chat you had with Paul Biancardi, guest on our show from time to time from ESPN. He's their national recruiting analyst, and he had some really nice things to say about E.J. Montgomery.
He did, Tom. It surprised me a little bit when he said that he thought E.J. could be as talented and skilled as any player that John Calipari has had play for him. When you look down the list of players that Calipari's had play for him, that puts you in pretty rare territory to have a guy like Paul say that you have that much potential at all. And I think E.J. has a chance to be a really, really good player. I don't know that I ever thought about him being that elite. But after seeing him a few times in high school and then hearing what is coming out of practice this year, I think EJ is could end up being one of those steals that Cal has kind of pulled off there at the last minute again. But he looks a lot like Tayshaun Prince just physically. And if he can get out there and extend that shooting range, as he says he's been working on a lot with Calipari's blessing, And then he's got an awful lot of skills for a guy 6'9" already, but he can extend that shooting range. He could really be something special. And again, that kind of might give them a little bit of an X factor they didn't have last year with a big guy that can shoot the ball like what he can. But Paul is really, really high on EJ and has been for quite a while. He thought that he slipped where he was only, what, in the top 30 of the rankings, and Paul thought he was pretty vastly underrated at that. And I guess pretty soon we'll see if Paul's right or not.
You know, Tayshaun was a really fun player to watch develop here because he was a big guy who could, as you said, go outside and shoot. And we certainly saw that in the Carolina game. He could go about as far as outside as is humanly possible. And yet he could also block shots. He had those long arms. I mean, he was a guy that almost could play anything 1 through 5 for you if you needed him to.
Yeah, and that's kind of like what EJ is. I mean, he's got that same frame to him. I think even probably as you talk to him, his personality's even a lot like what Tayshaun's was when he got there. They even sound a little bit alike to me and their demeanor and everything about it. And I'm really looking forward to seeing him play. And the good thing about it, he can basically kind of play with no pressure at all on him this year because he's not being counted on like what Anthony Davis was as a freshman to have to come in and carry a team. EJ's not going to have to do that, and I think he's really going to thrive. And I think he may block a lot more shots than most people are anticipating this year just because of what you said. He can come from off the ball and block a bunch of shots. I saw him do that a couple times when I watched him play, and I think he could give this team, and everybody's talking about what Reed Travis is going to bring to them, and he certainly will. But I think EJ could kind of give them another type of X factor that could just make them even better.
You know, that 2011 team, Cal's first Final Four team, didn't have the Anthony Davis, Nerlens Noel singular shot blocker, but they ended up blocking a good number of shots because Josh Harrelson got some, and then Terrence Jones was an underrated rim protector, I think, too. So maybe this could be that kind of team where there's no one guy that gets them all, but EJ would get a healthy percentage, Nick gets some, other guys get a few, and so it ends up being a better shot-blocking team than we might think it is on paper.
Yeah, I know that's one thing that John has talked about. He's a little worried about that they won't block enough shots because he always likes those guys that can protect that rim. But I'm like you. I think they might be a little bit better at doing that than what some are believing, and not because they have one guy that can do it, but because they have a lot of guys that can add in there. And at the end of the game, you think, well, yeah, we got enough blocks. We just didn't have anybody get more than two, which might be the best team ever that you can have. That 2011 team's a really good example of that.
You can read about the story on EJ and the others from Larry at VaultsViews.com and LAX18.com. And he joins us every Tuesday here on the Leach Report. Thank you, Larry.
All right. Thank you, Tom.
As Larry Vaught, and this is the Leach Report Radio Network. We are served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington. If you're tailgating this weekend or have a business function, let Wild Eggs cater it. Groups 8 or more, competitive prices for delivery and setup. Call 859-312-7288. Everything made from scratch. Kentucky owned and operated Wild Eggs of Lexington.
For the Leach Report on Facebook. Show updates, contests, and other cool stuff. Check it out today.
Second half of the Leach Report for a Tuesday. And Mark Story will join us here in just a bit from the Herald Leader. But right now we want to bring in another player interview. We had a chance to do these one-on-ones with the basketball players about a month ago. And it was opportunity to get extended conversations with them. And Guy Ramsey and I were teaming up for the interviews at our station, and we got a chance to visit with freshman point guard Emmanuel Quickley. Nice young man. Here you go.
You were the first member of this class. What was it like to watch the team kind of come together behind you and guys come in and then guys stay, and now the roster that you guys have now?
Oh, it was great. You know, once I found out who was coming back and then who was jumping on board, I was all excited. You know, all the guards that are coming back, people would have thought that I would have been mad, but I was excited just, you know, get to go against them. You know, you get better from going against really quality players every single day in practice. And
it's only made me a better player, excuse me.
Those battles in the backcourt, what are they like, and who is your favorite person to match up with?
I always match up against Ashton every single practice. If y'all seen the Bahamas, he was getting like 3-4 steals a game. So, you know, it's really good for me to go against him in practice. And I make him better, he makes me better. So that's pretty much that.
How strong do guards in practice have to be with the ball on this team?
Got to be strong. You know, with me and Ashton picking up full court, you know, you got to be strong. But it's only making us better. You know, that's why I think we were so ready for the Bahamas trip, is because, you know, in practice we're all going against each other. The bigs are going against each other. The guards are going against each other.
How important is it to have that connection and that bond already established before you start into practicing for the season, because it's just going to be such an intense battle on the court every day?
Yeah, I mean, we have probably one of the hardest schedules in the country. So, you know, practices, I think, are way harder than the games. Coach Cal makes the practices really competitive each and every day. So, you know, I think that makes for a winning culture, and I see why his teams win so much.
So why is it, how does that connection you guys have already built through the Bahamas and anything else, how's that going to help you succeed on the court?
Through the Bahamas, how's the Bahamas?
That's the chemistry you all have. Why is that important? How's it going to help you?
I think it's important because I think with any team, chemistry is important, whether you have talent or whether you don't. Chemistry can help you win a lot of games, and I think the Bahamas trip really helped us. You know, off the court, we got to know each other a lot, and on the court, we got to, you know where everybody wants the ball, stuff like that. So we got a little head start before other teams did before the season.
Stuff away from the court, is there one guy who's the most competitive, whether it's video games, pool, anything?
I think Keldon is one of the biggest trash talkers here, if that answers the question. It could be something as simple as grabbing a water bottle, for the last water bottle first, and he's going to talk trash for no reason. But yeah, I think definitely Keldon.
So is he the most fun person then to beat in any competition because of that?
Absolutely. I think it was a sprint, and we had been running 6 a.m., and he beat me, I think he beat me twice. And then the next day, he didn't finish all the way to the door. We ran like 2 miles. He didn't finish all the way to the door. And I beat him to the door, and I was talking trash the whole day.
What does that kind of competitiveness do for a team? How important is that?
That's why you come somewhere like Kentucky, because you know you're going against great players and competitive people, and it's just going to rise your level. Really anything you do, whether it's on the floor or off the floor, you know, you're just trying to be the best version of yourself.
With the way that other guys are working, even away from practice, do you feel like if you're not doing that same thing, that you're going to fall behind?
Absolutely. But, I've never been a guy to not get in the gym. I'm in the gym every day, honestly. Whether it's early mornings, late nights, you know, we're pretty much all in the gym, though. We got a lot of hardworking guys, so I don't think anybody should have any problem with that.
Along with the competitiveness, people keep talking about how much fun you guys have together, and I think that it's almost like that was a little bit different than what last year was. How much does your all's class, incoming class, kind of have to do with that sense of fun on this team?
I think we all got a lot of different personalities, which helps us out. You know, we got a lot of guys that, like me, love playing video games, and we got guys like Reed, Travis, that hate playing video games, don't touch video games. So, you know, we're all different, and I think that's why we're so close, is because I guess opposites attract.
You and Ashton are kind of like two quarterbacks that are both fighting to be the starter, and yet you're in the meeting room every day if you're a quarterback, and you're out there together, and that's the guy you're going to spend the most time with, is the guy you want to beat out for the job. How do you stay friends in that situation?
Just knowing that everybody's path is going to be different. You know, I'm pretty sure Shea came off the bench last year for a good part of the season. As Devin Booker came off the bench when he was here. There's been a lot of guys come off the bench. So just to know that, it really doesn't matter if you start or come off the bench. As long as you put in your work and get better each and every day, I think that's what's most important. That's what's going to help you make it.
That was Emmanuel Quickley. And he has done very well since arriving on campus. And so it's going to be quite a battle between him and Higgins. Down in the Bahamas, Quickley was a guy that just didn't commit a turnover, I think, until the fourth game. And part of the thing the coaches were telling us is that is not necessarily great, because it may indicate he's just a little too tentative. He's not being aggressive enough. So they don't want a lot of turnovers. But if you're – it's kind of like a quarterback, no interceptions may not always be a good thing, that you're not throwing it into enough tough spots. But on the other hand, Higgins, they want him to be more aggressive looking for his shot, outstanding defensively, but maybe a little too much going away from being aggressive with his offense. So it's going to be interesting to see how those two guys evolve and may end up kind of sharing the point. We'll see how it plays out. We're about 19 away from the top of the hour. It's the Leach Report Radio Network, and we'll come back and chat with Mark Story from the Herald Leader.
This is where the Big Blue Nation gathers. It's Talk Radio 1080 and the Leach Report, followed by Kentucky Sports Radio.
See a note here from on Twitter from college football writer Bruce Feldman, now at The Athletic, and everybody's doing their midseason awards. He has his midseason award winners by various categories that he just put out. And again, The Athletic is a subscription site, so you'll have to sign up to get access to this. But his midseason coach of the year is Mark Stoops of Kentucky, and he ranks Josh Allen as his best linebacker of the midseason. And one of the other categories is biggest grease fire of the midseason, and he puts the Louisville Cardinals there. So I know you you guys that are listening in the Big Blue Nation will like to read that one. And the biggest disappointment of the midseason, the Auburn Tigers out of the SEC. That's, again, Bruce Feldman from The Athletic. Mark Story joins us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline from KentuckySports.com and the Lexington Herald Leader. First of all, condolences on your Dodgers loss last night.
Yeah, that was that was kind of a listless effort given the stakes.
Yeah, and Walker Buehler from Henry Clay on the mound, so was hoping to see him do well. They talk about the winds were blowing in severely. I guess this is it Santa Ana winds, I think, out there. They were saying they were blowing in, so curtailed a lot of the offense, at least for the Dodgers anyway.
Yeah, the Dodgers are kind of a boom or bust offense anyway. If they don't hit home runs, they don't hit. So anything that curtails a power display is bad for the boys in blue.
Well, let's talk about the other boys in blue on the local level. It's a good segue there for Kentucky football. And you have a column today at KentuckySports.com about this season, and can Kentucky close it out better than it did back in 07 when it was 5-1, then upset number one. So I guess after 6-1, upset the number one team in the country, LSU. And they've had, you know, some good starts, 5-1 starts here in recent years, but it seems like people feel much differently about this one, maybe back to the 07 group, that this is, you know, a much better team than the recent 5-1 starts. You agree?
I do. You know, you go, last year's team started 5-1, but I mean, that team once they lost Boom Williams and Jeff Badette, I never felt like that team was really equipped to have kind of the breakthrough season. And of course, I guess it was the 2014 team that started 5-1, but then they lost their last six, and that was just completely a function of the schedule. They lost those six games as an underdog in all of them. They weren't games they were supposed to win. I think you do have to go back to 2007 to find a year when Kentucky was in this position with a chance to, you know, have the breakthrough year, to do something special, and had a team that, you know, realistically, you know, you could see doing that.
Sometimes things, to have a special season, you have to have some things break in your favor. And you point out in the column that Kentucky that year would have really benefited by having the open date a little earlier. I always thought that team, they had the Thursday night game at South Carolina, then they had the upset of number one LSU, and then game day comes to town, and you show down against Tebow in a shootout. And by the time they got to Mississippi State, they were beat up physically and spent mentally and just put in a really lackluster performance and a loss. And it really wasn't until they got down 24-7 at halftime to Tennessee till they really bounce back from it. Whereas this team, it still has a couple of non-conference games left, where that team had already played all of its non-conference foes, and it got the open date at what looks to be a really good time.
Yeah, the schedule appears to set up just so much better for this team than it did in 07. I agree with you on the 07 team. I will always believe that had the open date come earlier for them, that team would have finished the job. You know, it's not just the three games you mentioned. You go back, you know, in a 6-week stretch, they played an emotional rivalry game with Louisville.
Yeah,
they went to Arkansas, the defending SEC West champion, and won on the road in that game. Then they, you know, played Florida Atlantic, which wasn't a big deal. But then they had the three games you mentioned. You know, South Carolina on Thursday night at the time, you know, when there was a lot of hype about trying to beat Steve Spurrier, and then came home and upset number one LSU, and then had the college game day game against Tebow in Florida, and they just were wiped out. You know, physically, when they got to that Mississippi State game, which was where that season derailed, you know, Keenan Burton and Raphael Little, two of the best players, didn't even dress for that game, and they just didn't have anything in the tank. And I think this team, you know, had the open date coming when it did, you know, literally in the middle of the season, gives them a chance to, you know, as Mark's, you know, to sort of rest and reset. And then the other thing that is advantageous for the current team, you look at 07, the teams they played down the stretch, you know, Florida wound up winning 9 games, Georgia wound up winning 11 games, Tennessee wound up winning 10 games, and, you know, that doesn't, this, other than Georgia this year, there's nobody like that on the schedule, and that doesn't mean some of these aren't difficult games, because they will be, but just in terms of the way the schedule breaks, that this team has a much better chance to finish the job, so to speak.
Talking with Mark Story from the Herald Leader and KentuckySports.com. I think when Kentucky takes the field Saturday, we'll all be interested to especially pay attention to what they do offensively and how they look. Because it wasn't just the Texas A&M game. It started really in the second half of the South Carolina game where they weren't as productive. And, you know, you can say, well, they had a big lead, and so they weren't playing the same way as they would have in a different type of game in the second half against South Carolina. Nevertheless, they've still gone 6 quarters with one offensive touchdown. What do you think they do on Saturday in terms of having this open week to have self-evaluated and set their plan for the second half?
Well, I hope they just go back to sort of tap into who they are. I mean, this is a team that's built on a power running game, and I think that's what they are, and I think that's what they need to be. You know, I'm not enough of a football expert to, you know, break down, you know, can they, you know, switch blocking schemes and, you know, use motion to create more advantageous matchups, that kind of thing. But I just think they need to get back to their identity. You know, I went back and looked at the South Carolina, the game and kind of the notes, and I was reading the Will Muschamp's post-game news conference, and he claimed they didn't do anything different in the second half strategically. They just played better. But you're right. You know, I'm a little more concerned about the offense because it is 6 quarters. If it had just been one game, if it had just been Texas A&M, you know, I might just throw that out as, you know, a bad matchup or maybe a bad Kentucky game plan. But the fact that it is 6 quarters, I think it's really important. You know, obviously Kentucky needs to win against Vanderbilt Saturday, but I think it's really important for the offense to play well and to get off to a good start.
You know, we don't have that look of to see the whole field that the, you know, former players talk about, the whole 22 look at the field. So we're watching, you know, TV replays to get an idea of, you know, what teams are doing against them. Dusty Bonner was on last week, and he was talking about A&M's defensive plan. And perhaps that, you know, he made a point that perhaps some of the indecisiveness that we saw in Terry Wilson can be attributed to maybe it was a good plan for A&M. Maybe they threw something at him he hadn't seen or wasn't ready for. So now you've got that. I would think, you know, that's not surprising that would happen for a young quarterback. How does he learn from that? Can he adapt? Can you find things to help him when he's in that situation again?
Yeah, it was interesting. I didn't cover the games. I just watched it on TV. I think it's possible that A&M gave him looks that he hadn't seen. I also think it's possible he just wasn't comfortable with, you know, the way, you know, for whatever reason, Kentucky's emphasis seemed different in that game, and maybe he was uncomfortable. You know, maybe it's a combination of both. But, you know, the indecisiveness, you know, was something that I really hadn't seen out of him since maybe the first half against Central Michigan, when he admitted, you know, it was his very first FBS start and he was nervous. But the thing that I think I've always found interesting, I've talked to Terry Wilson three times in my life, so take this for what it's worth. But in talking to him, there's a maturity about him, or at least that comes across. So I'm very anxious to see how he's going to respond, because it obviously is important both, you know, for him and I think for the team that he come back and, you know, sort of, you know, play well and sort of, you know, reestablish the belief. You know, I'm not saying that the team has lost faith in him, but I think to some extent the fan base did. So I think it would be, you know, just better for everybody if he comes back and plays well.
And just it would seem natural for any athlete when you have a subpar game or don't play like yourself that, you know, the longer that lingers, the more it gets in your own head.
I think that's a risk. But I do think that's where, you know, again, in my limited exposure to him, he seems like kind of an old soul. So I my hypothesis is he's equipped to handle something like this. So I'm anxious to see if that proves to be true on Saturday night.
That's interesting. Any particular story or anything that gave you that impression, or just his overall demeanor?
Well, two things. First, that's just the vibe I've gotten off him when I've talked to him. But the other thing is I did the quarterback preview before the season for the Herald Leader, and I talked to his junior college coach, and that was what he emphasized, was that, you know, oftentimes in JUCOs, or at least sometimes, you're working with guys who are there looking for a second chance. And, you know, he said Terry Wilson was a kid he never had to worry about at all. You know, showed up on time, sat in the front, you know, got the job done in the classroom, just, you know, was a guy who knew where he wanted to go and was taking care of his business.
Mark Story, thank you much for the time. We'll see you Saturday.
Thanks, Tom.
Mark Story, it's at Mark C. Story on Twitter, KentuckySports.com on the web. And he joins us on the Kentucky Branded Hotline here on the Leach Report. We'll be right back to wrap it up. Donato Slice, the Wildcat history. Kentucky got its first ever win over Steve Spurrier on this day in 2010. And they had to come from behind to do it. I think it was 28-10 at halftime. But Kentucky rallied, and Mike Hartline got drilled just as he released the football, put it right on the money to Randall Cobb to beat the 10th-ranked Gamecocks at Kroger Field. And a happy birthday today to former Wildcat basketball player Todd Ziegler. Shuffle Bean Coffee, have you tried it yet? If you haven't, you need to. You can find it at Kroger stores around Kentucky. Look for it when you're out shopping for groceries. And if you don't see Shuffle Bean Coffee, ask for it. Tell them they need to carry this great Kentucky-owned and operated company. Go to shufflebean.us. You can find locations. You can find out more about how they monitor the process of making a great cup of coffee for you from seed to cup. And you can also see just a little bit of the backstory. Find out you can order through Amazon Prime, too. It's Shuffle Bean Coffee, the official coffee of Rupp Arena and the KFC Yum Center. All right, we're going to wrap up this edition of the Leach Report tomorrow. Anthony White will join us. Chris Fisher. On Thursday, we got Tony Barnhart along with Mike Pratt, Justin Rowland. On Friday, Chris Lowe from ESPN, Joe Fisher from the Vandy Network. So we'll got a busy week lined up. Join us here on the Leach Report, served up by Wild Eggs of Lexington.
Check out the podcast page at TomLeachKY.com whenever you miss a show. And be sure to follow the Leach Report Facebook page. If you have a question for Tom, email it to LeachReport@gmail.com. See you next time.